Sometimes when I get insomnia, I'll flick on the television because usually it serves as a powerful sleep aid. And on the most recent occasion, the first thing that came on was some show about Hollywood billionaire mogul David Geffen. And these were the first words he spoke, even before the credits.
I've always thought that each person invented himself for whatever reasons, through whatever circumstance, through whatever he has gone through, that we are each a figment of our own imagination. And some people have a greater ability to imagine than others.
And I thought, that sounds about right. Some of us are self-invented. And then the documentary quickly, it degenerated into all manner of sycophants waxing vomitous about the wonders of David. You know, Tom Hanks and Yoko Ono and click. The very next offering grabbed me for multiple reasons. It was a documentary about automotive titan John DeLorean. And how serendipitous was Geffen's statement, because if ever a dude invented himself, resulting in spectacular success and tragic failure, it was John Z. DeLorean. He was maybe the most famous or infamous car guy of all time, with the exception of Henry Ford, but DeLorean had he had star power Ford could never muster, even with his name on hundreds of millions of automobiles. How many people could name the guy who founded General Motors? Damn few. Lee Iacocca was a popular figure when he ran Chrysler, but never in DeLorean's league in terms of celebrity. Yeah, there are many other notable car guys. Andretti, Earnhardt, Petty, Shelby. But to the average Joe, those names only registered after a race win. They were not omnipresent in the public consciousness as DeLorean's was. DeLorean's story had everything. Big money, cool cars, pointy women, a drug bust, a prolonged trial, acquittal, and bankruptcy. The only missing element was murder. Beyond those magic ingredients, it grabbed my attention because it reminded me of a long-forgotten encounter I had with DeLorean at a moment when his career was flaming wreckage, and mine was just getting started. Hang on, I'll tell you about it.
The safari park.
You're killing me, Larry.
Hello, Larry.
Hats off to Larry.
Larry, fucking Larry.
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 Larry. Larry, get into bed now.
Success is one of the most elastic words, isn't it? The most common measure, at least in the last few centuries, has been financial success. Fame is another measure. Often one goes with the other. Some guys get very famous and wind up broke. Other guys get sick rich and crave fame. Lots of them try to buy celebrity with philanthropy or rubbing shoulders with politicians, movie stars, and so on. But they know it's manufactured fame. Only A-list entertainers achieve organic fame. Maybe a few artists here and there. Warhol, Picasso. Are Gates and Bezos famous? Only because they're rich. Would anyone know they existed were they not wealthy? Once in a great while, some business guy becomes blazingly famous. Steve Jobs did, but it was wholly dependent on fans of his devices. Had he not been the face of Apple, few people would have known his face or name. Plus, Jobs also came up very short on the glamour quotient. The black mock turtlenecks and jeans and sneakers, he was a pretty ordinary-looking guy. But DeLorean, there was a span of time when he was like a one-man beetle. Women wanted to bed him. Guys wanted to hang out with him. People were throwing money at him. What strange alchemy yields that level of fame and success? What's at the root of it? What's the common DNA these people share? Sure, they have ambition and creativity and perseverance, but the X factor just may be the word no. There was this goofy movie starring Jim Carrey and Terrence Stamp. Stamp played this life coach guru, and his mantra was the phrase, "Say yes." And as the story unfolds, it appears that that is the key to success in life, just saying yes to everything, which is typical movie bullshit. Saying yes is much easier than saying no, isn't it? All our lives, from when we're small children, we are conditioned by schools, corporations, religions, authority. We're conditioned to say yes. Why do they do that? Is it for our benefit or theirs? We spend vast portions of our lives in the clutches of these institutions, and they all want us to do what they want us to do. Comply. Say yes. Don't say no. Do not cause a kink in the hose. Do not make the assembly line stop. Keep it moving so the next crop of students or recruits or employees can be sucked into the intake ports as you are blown out through the exhaust system. Throughout so much of life's journey, the message is, say yes. Go along to get along. Do it our way. After years of that, saying,
yes, okay, all right.
Well, it becomes automatic, doesn't it? Easy. Until yes is no longer a choice, it's a fucking reflex. Some people love living that way. They are no more aware that they are being processed than cattle are when driven into the stockyards for slaughter. We spend our lives clambering through these monoliths for validation and recognition and promotion, but the monoliths, the organizations, they have only one purpose, the preservation of the organization. And if that preservation requires crushing the individual, then so be it. But once in a great while, there are people who figure out how to game the organization and get more out of it than a paycheck and a gold watch. And the foundation of that gaming is saying no. No to the conformity. No to the status quo. No to the golden handcuffs until retirement. DeLorean was a stellar gamer. He was self-made in every way. His parents were Romanian immigrants, and his father was a violent alcoholic. John went to engineering school and was hired by Detroit car companies. At General Motors, he came up with some kick-ass designs, most famously the Pontiac GTO. He saw the future of muscle cars, so he took the Pontiac Tempest, which was a bland, mid-sized box of boredom, reshaped it some, and then shoehorned an enormous V8 engine under the hood, and gave it an exotic Italian racing name, Gran Turismo Omologato. Well, pretty soon they could not build them fast enough to meet demand, and DeLorean was a rising star among General Motors execs. GM was a lot like IBM and all giant corporations. Conformity was mandatory. Everyone had to wear dark suits and white shirts and have astronaut haircuts. It all made perfect sense, right? Assembly line human beings to turn out assembly line products. And for years, DeLorean was as square as any of them. But he had something few engineers in any field had. Charisma. Personality. He was a gifted communicator. When DeLorean talked, people listened. He understood marketing, and he was a natural-born salesman. So his star continued to rise until he had one of the top jobs at GM. And as he rode the tide of his own success, he did something that is unforgivable in any large organization. He began to be the guy he really wanted to be, which was not just another suit. He grew his hair longer. He wore Edwardian suits with big Barrymore collars and flared pants. He cooked up reasons to go to Los Angeles and hang out with movie stars. He even had his own chin rebuilt with plastic surgery, giving him a Cary Grant jawline. This did not sit well with the cookie-cutter execs back in gray and gloomy Detroit. Then DeLorean did something that really pissed them off. He married a stunningly beautiful model who was literally half his age. She was 24 and he was 50. Her name was Christina Ferrari and she was an eyeful. They were a true power couple. Magazine covers and TV appearances and fabulous homes. And then suddenly DeLorean quit to pursue his dream, building his own car named what else? The DeLorean. Actually, whether he quit or was fired is unknown. As a parting gift, GM handed him a Cadillac dealership in Florida. Lots and lots of guys and groups of guys have tried to build their own cars, and junkyards and museums are littered with their efforts. Tucker, Kaiser, Studebaker, Bricklin, Duesenberg, Pierce Arrow, the list is long. Automobile manufacturing is the most capital-thirsty business there is. Even the major players, Chrysler, GM, went bankrupt, were bailed out by Uncle Sam, in other words, you and me. Ford was solvent, but got on its knees and begged for money anyway, because free money's free money, right? So how could one guy, with a grand vision, possibly launch a completely new automobile independently? DeLorean needed investors with deep pockets, and he found one in the British government, who fronted him the cost of building his factory in Belfast, North Ireland, which at the time was plagued by civil war and 33% unemployment. A factory went up in record time, and his dream car, with the gullwing doors and stainless steel body, it became a reality. It looked pretty cool. But it was powered by an anemic Renault six-cylinder engine that cranked out only 130 horses. The sticker price was anywhere from $26,000 to nearly $30,000. For that kind of jing, you could almost buy two Corvettes equipped with a much more powerful 350 V8 that delivered true sports car performance. DeLorean had projected sales of 30,000 units in the first year. Well, in the 3 years they were produced, they only made 9,000, and a lot of those never sold. The Brits were pissed and turning off the money faucet. DeLorean was desperate for cash when some chooch offered him a hell of a deal. If John would front him only $1.8 million in cash, he could transform that into $24 million through the miracle of cocaine margins. DeLorean jumped at the offer and got a bonus, a keepsake video of the transaction, thanks to a camera hidden by the Federal Bureau of Overpaid Armed Accountants looking for something to do. They cuffed him, read him his rights, and locked him up. It was a massive news story all around the globe. DeLorean posted bail, $10 million. The trial dragged on for 2 years. His attorney was Howard Weitz, a guy who would gain even greater fame as part of O.J. Simpson's dream team. Every day, John and his gorgeous wife would stride into the courthouse. Of course, it was in L.A., the only city with enough glamour and sunshine to host an event like that. They both wear designer clothes and crazy cool sunglasses. They looked smashing, like they were heading into some red carpet event. Now you're wondering, okay, Larry, where the hell do you come in? Well, at that time, I was in New York, working for the world's biggest TV network. I was just out of school, and it was a lot of fun. Besides studios and stars and events, they kept the laughs going. Entertainment is a long, long way from, say, banking or insurance. Even the business of entertainment can be a blast. It was around about Halloween, and somebody dreamed up the idea of a company pumpkin carving contest. I cogitated for a couple days and then flashed on an idea I figured would get some attention and laughs. I went to a toy store, got a car with axles and cool alloy wheels, fastened those to the pumpkin. Next, I grafted the toy car's headlights and doors to the pumpkin. I asked a pal in the art department if he would dummy up a logo of a certain futuristic font and paint it so it looked like steel. Then I got to work with a serrated knife to carve a man's face. Lastly, the pièce de résistance. I bought a micro recorder. My pumpkin would not be a mute static work. It would deliver visuals and audio. There was a huge conference room where all the pumpkin entries were lined up with their creators. Some of them were amazing. Witches and ghosts, punk rockers and dog collars. One looked like a television with rabbit ears and the network logo. That one had me worried. Finally, at 4 p.m., one of the top guys appeared to do the judging, and fortunately, he was not a stiff. He was known for his sense of humor. He worked his way along the table with his secretary by his side, taking notes on his preferences. When he got to my pumpkin, his face cracked a smile from ear to ear. There it was, the DeLorean Motor Pumpkin. It had the DMC logo in front, alloy wheels, and rectangular headlights. A man's face with a thick line of white powder glistening beneath his nostril. I switched on the microcassette and my pumpkin came alive.
Hello. Welcome to the showroom. Most people think that DMC logo stands for DeLorean Motor Car. That is incorrect. What DMC means is do more coke. Because the more coke you do, the more cars I can make.
The guy laughed so hard he bent at the waist and hung on to his knees. When he straightened up, he clapped his hand on my shoulder and announced me the winner, and he hadn't even seen the rest of the entries. He told me I was a very funny guy and left. Had I been me now, I would have said, really? Then send me to LA to punch up scripts on a sitcom. That hadn't even occurred to me at the time. All I wanted to do was win a goofy contest and have some laughs. I blew a fantastic opportunity, which I had created but failed to recognize or seize. Sometime after that, DeLorean was acquitted of all charges. The judge ruled the entire sting operation illegal entrapment from start to finish. Another taxpayer-funded fiasco from the Federal Bureau of Incompetence. DeLorean eluded imprisonment, but his dream was demolished. In fact, his life was. Shortly after his exoneration, his beautiful wife left him, took the kids, moved to LA where she got a job hosting a television show. One morning, I stood alone in the elevator to ride up to my office on the 17th floor. Just as the doors were about to close, the guy stepped on. John DeLorean. There were studios in the building, and I figured he was there to do an interview. He nodded to me, and I nodded back. He looked tired. He looked worn out. He looked much older than he had on television. Most of all, he looked sad. Like he had the weight of the world on his shoulders. By that time, he had lost everything and was in a custody battle for his children. I was still a long way off from being a father, but I knew that had to be the toughest fight of all. As the elevator dinged for his floor, I wished him the very, very best of luck. He shook my hand and thanked me as if I were his last friend on earth. He looked close to tears. When I reached my office, I just sat there in silence for a long time. I thought about that pumpkin, all the laughs it had produced. I didn't regret having made it. I think DeLorean might have found it amusing. The guy had a trait all truly charismatic people share. He could laugh at himself. At the courthouse after his exoneration, he was swamped by the press, and someone asked him what he would do now. He smiled and said, I don't know, would you buy a used car from me? John DeLorean died in 2005 at 80 years of age. He was living in a small walk-up condominium in New Jersey. He had been selling DeLorean wristwatches online in an attempt to generate seed money to finance another car company. Ironically, the car he created is most famous for being a prop in the movie Back to the Future. You can buy a used DeLorean today for around 40 grand. Some people hated John DeLorean. But love him or hate him, he must be respected for a spirit that could not be extinguished. He never quit. I'll bet DeLorean got a lot farther in life by saying no than yes. He said no to mediocrity, no to naysayers, no to the corporate grind, no to conformity, no to compliance, and most importantly, no to fear. If he'd only said no to the snakes at the FBI. Hey, thanks for hanging with me once again. It's always great to be with you. If you like what you just heard, visit the show page at thatlarryshow.com. There you will find hundreds more episodes. If you really like what you heard, click the Patreon or PayPal buttons and join the dojo, which helps me keep this show going. If you're a car guy or a car chick, you know you need a good key fob, and we've still got some in stock. It's got that vintage motel look. It feels right in your hand, won't get lost in your bag, and tells the world you're a member of the coolest audience in podcasting. Only 10 bucks. You can find them at thatlarryshow.com. Follow the show on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, No Agenda Social. There are links for those places also on the show page. If you want to write to me, it's thatlarryshow@gmail.com. My friends, we live in a world where yes men and yes women are strangely venerated. Should you find yourself slipping into the quicksand of compliance, try saying no for an hour or a day. Makes me feel good when I do. I'll see you next Wednesday or thereabouts. And until that time, take no shit.